You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And a very good Monday morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you had a good weekend. And Valentine's Day is coming up, so a public service announcement out there. Get correct, all right? Get correct. You don't want to screw that one up. So just devote a little time to it, put some thought into it, and do the right thing. Do the right thing. If not, I won't even say that. Just do the right thing. That's words of the wise should be sufficient, as somebody used to say to me in my life. So anyway, let me tell you what we're going to do today. We're going to talk current events. So Justin Constantine's going to join us. So always an interesting guy. And so I heard a little thing on, I heard a couple of things that yesterday on news programs, one on Face the Nation. It kind of summarizes where people are. It breaks down the electorate into percentages, into four groups, which I thought was pretty interesting. So I'm going to play that for Justin, get his thoughts on it. And also there's some audio about Jim Webb. And Webb makes some interesting comments about that this might not be a bad thing for us. It might not be a bad thing for us in terms of the whole Trump and this whole thing that we're going through. So interesting stuff. The other story, certainly a couple stories that I'm following for personal reasons. One up in Oroville, which is close to Sacramento, there's a dam that's being threatened up there. A dam. Yeah, no kidding. And so they ordered an evacuation last night. So it's in a city. It's called the Oroville Dam. And the Sierra Nevadas have got rain and snow like you can't believe. So the dam is like 98%. So they have like water gushing out of like the main dam where you produce electricity from. And then they have like an emergency spillway, an auxiliary spillway. So they open that up when you have more coming into the dam than you can get rid of. And then there's a third emergency over, I guess just a spillway, where when those two can't discharge enough water and the dam's that full, that it simply would come over here and it's kind of, it runs down. And that emergency wall was getting ready to, they said, it had a chance to give out within the hour. And that was yesterday at about 4 o'clock. So interesting. The other national story that we'll keep an eye on is the president's national security advisor may have lied. And judging by the language that they're using, which is something words to the effect that he's not entirely sure if he didn't say something. what does that sound like? That to me sounds like somebody who got caught. And now here's his problem. His problem is he told the vice president that he never spoke about it. And the vice president went on national media and said, no, he did not speak of that. So that's a bit of a problem. That is a bit of a problem. And so Mike Flynn may not survive. And I didn't think he'd survive the Trump administration, but I thought maybe he would get through a month or so. And so I think Flynn is a clown. That's just my opinion. The stuff he says, the stuff his kids said before they got rid of him, I think that he's not a very savvy guy, certainly. And I have friends that don't care for him at all, believed that he rode McChrystal's coattails in the soft community to where he got, and had been in meetings with him and wasn't so much. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on all of that, and we'll get Justin's opinion on it as well. So good morning to you. Thanks for listening to All Marine Radio here on a Monday. Oh, after Justin, Jerry Durant's going to join us. Jerry is he's a Vietnam veteran, and he retired here, you know, recently on active duty through Iraq and Afghanistan. So he will join us this morning. Recently back from doing some work in Iraq, so we'll find out where he was, what he was doing, and how things are going. And get a guy who's been around a little bit, get his opinion, and works with Christians, Sunni, Shiites, Kurds, all of it in his capacity, doing some stuff in Iraq. So if you haven't met him already, you'll meet Jerry Durant. He's a great guy, great Marine officer, great Marine. And with a ton of experience and a fun guy. So you'll meet him today. So with all of that said, we kick off the morning with the national anthem. Good morning. Done. Colleen sings right now.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, wipe us home. God bless America. My home, sweet home, God bless America, my home, sweet home, Dundad.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Time for us to check the weather here on a Monday as we get going. Yeah, and I'll tell you what. It'll be a cool week this week, and I'll tell you about that. But it's going to be a good week on All Marine Radio, and so excited about it. The weather, as we check it here. Yeah, the Sierra Nevadas have been pretty crazy. You know, they went from a drought to, you know, there's no drought in Northern California. And I would tell you, there's none with the amount of rain. I just emptied out some bins. There was a foot of rain in them. And they weren't collecting from any other place. So that's in Southern California, a foot of rain. And, yeah, it's been crazy, the weather out here. So the drought, I don't know if it's officially over here in Southern California. I know in Northern California, hell, they're worried about flooding up there. So anyway, we'll check the weather. Global warming, that's right. Global warming, that's always the answer. The in Quantico, 42 degrees in sunny skies. In at Camp Lejeune, it is 55 degrees under sunny skies. In Texas, where the Gunner is, 54 and cloudy. Up in North Dakota, it's 23 and sunny. 29 Palms, 50 and sunny. Camp Pendleton, 47 and sunny, although I find that hard to believe. It's cloudy, not 30 miles away. Camp Smith in Hawaii, warmer. It's cloudy, dark, and 74 degrees with the sun down. How about that? North Dakota, clear and sunny in 23. Go figure. In Okinawa, cloudy, dark, and 57. Fallujah, 59, cloudy and dark. And at the home of All Marine Radio, give me 1 second. It is 51 degrees under partly cloudy skies. So that is a look at our weather here and around the Marine Corps. We'll take a quick break this hour of All Marine Radio Talk, brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. The maker of the Battle Mug starts out as 10-pound block of T6 aluminum. After they mill it, machine it, anodize it, it's ready for you to make it your own. Whether you're an operator or you're taking it to work, matters not. They have all kinds of stuff for you to trick it out on. If you're taking it to work, let me tell you how you trick it out. Picatinny rails, the rails that you see on an M4 and an M16, and other weapons as well, that allow you to make it modular. Lasers, scopes, whatnot, that's on the outside of the battle mark. So if you're going out, if you're going to the office, you can put a service emblem, you can put flags, you can put all kinds of other stuff they have. If you're taking it to the field, binoculars, lasers, cameras, all kinds of stuff. They have a lid that you can put on it so you don't dump your coffee in your lap when you laze right before you blaze. Yep. So it's a very cool gift. What's it appropriate for? Why would you buy it? Hail and farewell, certainly more farewell than hell. A mess night gift for a guest speaker or somebody like that. Promotions, retirements, and other unique occasions. It's a great Valentine's Day gift for your guy, I would tell you that. Or if your girl likes to hunt, or she's an operator, get it for her too. I don't want to be sexist here. Check it out, battlemug.com, battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a veteran-owned and operated company, Marine originated and made entirely in the United States. So all good stuff. We're going to take a quick break. Justin Constantine joins us next on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my commanding unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. After 7 o'clock here on the West Coast, joining me now after great difficulty is Justin Constantine. Justin, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. How about you?
I've got no issues this morning other than your phone. So let's bring us up to date. Are you out and about speaking this week? What do you got going?
I am. Actually, this weekend I spoke on Saturday down at at McGuire, I guess it's joint Dix McGuire base in New Jersey. There's for the Air Force Reserve Unit, the 514th Air Mobility Wing, and they had their annual awards banquet. And they asked me to come and be their keynote speaker, so I talked for about 10 or 12 minutes, and it was a lot different than a Marine Corps event. It's the first time I spoke at an Air Force event. Lots of horns and air horns and music, and it was a real party atmosphere, but it was pretty awesome seeing all from E5s up to O3s get awards for being the best there, and so that was neat. I just talked about my service in Iraq and, frankly, how young enlisted folks were responsible for saving my life, so I hope it resonated with them, and I had a good time talking with them, so that was cool. And this week I'm heading out to Colorado to talk to a company out there that is just starting their veteran hiring program. So I'm a consultant with military.com, so I'm going to assess their program and give them a report and help them institute some processes so they can have a great veteran hiring program out there.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. So if somebody's what issues If a company's looking for a speaker, do you have something that you like to talk about, or?
Yeah, usually people will contact me if they want a speaker who will talk about leadership or overcoming adversity or the upside of change or all of those put together. And so I've been very busy January and February because a lot of companies have their kickoff sales meetings or their annual meetings. So they want to hear all about that. I never come in as an industry expert on whatever it is they're talking about, but I talk about my experiences, and then I wrote a book last year about Marine Corps leadership principles and how they apply to the private sector, so I talk about that. I'm talking in a couple of months to Customs and Border Patrol is having a conference, and so I'm talking about leadership, and then we're having a leadership workshop for about 4 hours. And so typically it's just taking lessons that we all know from the Marine Corps and the other branches and talk about how they apply over in theater, but how they also apply in daily lives here at home, in the private sector, but in our communities as well.
How do you relate your own personal experience of being wounded is that all part of what you talk about?
Yeah, or? I mean, it's part of it as background information. And of course, I'm quick to say that, what I went through, of course, getting shot in the head is extreme, but the lessons I've learned over the last 10 years aren't. They're basic. And so I talk about teamwork and asking for help and being okay with leaning on others for support, and that, I did a whole TED Talk on the topic of you're stronger than you think you are. So I talk about that as well. Because everyone in the audience is facing some sort of challenges, whether it's at work or at home or with a person or something like that. And so uniformly, the presentations go very well. Standing ovations, lots of people want to come over and talk afterwards. And a lot of that's because they haven't talked to a wounded warrior before, or they're veterans themselves. They know a veteran that wants to come over and say hi and say thanks, which I really appreciate. And so, but from the highest levels, from the CEOs of major companies on down to their staff, they appreciate the message because more and more companies are instituting veteran hiring programs. People of this generation appreciate what our veterans bring to the workplace, and so they always go very well. And I appreciate the chance to get in front of those audiences.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
My guest this morning, he's not a guest, really. He's not a guest. If he was a guest, I'd treat him different. Justin Constant joins me.
You wouldn't blame me around that.
Exactly. He gets the usual and standard treatment. We're going to talk current events. Number one, is Mike Flynn going to survive?
We talked about this
a month ago, and I said he wouldn't make it, and you said, that's you're really going out on a limb on that one. But I thought he would get through a month.
I thought he would last a little bit longer. I don't think this is going to derail him. I do think it really affects his credibility and the credibility of the vice president and the president, because they relied on him. Probably, I would probably say in this instance that they didn't know. I don't think he was honest in his answers earlier, and I think those above him took his word in. I think that's probably as high as it goes. But I think it's a real sad state of affairs when right off the bat, it looks like he lied about whether or not he had these conversations, about the sanctions. And these are important conversations, and because they affect, our relationship with obviously a major player out there, and his relationship, the administration's relationship to the American public, and whether or not we can trust what they have to say. And this all falls under transparency. This administration is obviously struggling in that category, so this doesn't help anything.
Talk to me about, I have an opinion on that.
Let's finish up. I mean,
let me tell you, I think Flynn is toxic. I think he was a great supporter of the president early on, and there was a measure of loyalty. But I don't think he has too many friends in and around Washington. I know guys that have worked for him or with him in the soft community, and he does not have a very good reputation among those guys. So it's to me it's kind of interesting.
Do you think he had a role in the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff not being a standing member of the National Security Council?
You know what? I'm not sure. But if I gave it some thought, I would say, you know, the way they sold that was...
Getting invited.
Yeah, he's, you know, he can come wherever, whenever he wants to, but he's not required. And if we're talking other issues, you know, and again, I guess intellectually that makes sense. The question is, did they attempt to marginalize a guy like Jim Mattis, who is who doesn't ride
in, jumped him.
Yeah, who doesn't ride in anybody's backseat. And supposedly both of those guys are being kind of pushed to the edge, you know, and in this case that we're talking about, thanks for the correction, is General Dunford. but I mean, they're very magnanimous about it, and they came out and said, no. They said all the right things. But the question is, is Flynn putting his, you know, little crew together so that he can, so that he can have his own, you know, little reign of terror? I just don't think that, who sticks their neck out for Mike Flynn though in that administration.
Yeah, no one's saying anything good or backed him up on this at all.
Yeah, and that's what I think his problem is. I think based on the behavior of his kid, and where does knucklehead kid learn that stuff?
Yeah.
Right?
Why is it still okay for him to be saying it and tweeting these things?
Yeah. You know, if your dad's a respect...
Dad said quit it, I would quit it.
Yeah. Do you think Bob Dole's kids run around doing stuff like that?
Right.
I'll give you the answer to that. No. Do you think the Dunford boys roll around doing stuff like that? The answer to that is no. Okay, so where does that come? It comes from Flynn. And so I just think he's a loose cannon. And let me tell you, for him to lie to the vice president and for the vice president about Russia. Now, this is not, you know, how did you get to work today? All right. This has to do with the credibility of the incoming administration, what you communicated to a foreign government before we were even in office. That's now, maybe people do that. I don't know. But you got caught and then you lied about it. You know, I don't know. I don't think he survives. Or if he does, he's not long. He's even shorter for the world than I thought.
You gave him a year.
I did. What a fool. what a fool.
You were off by 80%. But.
Exactly. 80? I was like the 95%, man. Holy shit.
I'm giving him a couple weeks here.
Okay, I want to play a little audio for you from yesterday. It was kind of interesting. This is from Face the Nation. And the audio has to do with the way the country's segmented statistically.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was pretty interesting. So it's, I think it's about 5 minutes, so bear with me. They talk about percentages, and then when they ask specific questions to each percentage, how they identified and how they broke down. I thought it was pretty interesting. So we'll get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, great.
All right.
We're joined now by CBS News Elections Director Anthony Salvanto, who has teamed up with YouGov to launch the Nation Tracker, a survey project aimed at monitoring Americans' views on the Trump administration, Congress, and the country. Anthony, it's so great to have you back. So let's just describe first for people what this is.
Well, as we did in 2016, the goal is always to understand people and listen to them, not simply to predict them or stick a number on them. So what we wanted to do was go out there, and we assembled a large representative panel from the country. It is balanced between people who supported Donald Trump and voted for him and people who backed Hillary Clinton and those who didn't vote. And it's larger than a typical poll. So what we're going to do is we're going to return to this panel again and again and follow how these people are feeling about the administration, but more importantly, John, what they want and why they want it, to really understand this complexity behind just this sort of idea that the nation is divided.
And what I find so fascinating about over all the years of talking to voters, but this is just a huge, massive group, that also you get a sense of how they're sifting and sorting all of this fast-breaking news, how it's filtering out to them from a time in Washington where the news seems to change every 10 seconds.
Yeah, America doesn't always process and think the way that Washington thinks or the way Washington thinks America thinks. So,
well, what have you – let's just – at the what's the basic groupings that you've come up with in your findings?
Right. Well, folks have sorted themselves into four basic groups with regards to how they feel about the administration right now. There's four of them, and they are, first, the what we call the believers, the people who are strongly with the president. And then there's a second group who are also in support of him, but with conditions. They're waiting to see him deliver. There's a third group that isn't supporting him right now, but could, and we'll talk about what they are looking for. And then there's a fourth group of those who are firmly opposed.
All right, good. So we've got four groups. Let's start with the first group, the believers. Give us the characteristics that group has.
The believers like everything they see. They like what he's doing, and they like how he's doing it. They feel like he is delivering on what he promised in the campaign, if not more. They like the travel ban. They would support him going beyond, around the courts to enforce the ban. They like the wall idea, and they think Mexico will pay for it. They're very concerned with the security of the country. They believe Donald Trump on the facts when people challenge him, and they defend him like that. They're about a fifth of the nation right now. Okay.
And this is the group that President Trump, when he was a candidate, he joked, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and the people would still be for me. So the believers, one-fifth of the country, these are the ones who really are all in for the president.
The base of the base. But they're different from this group who also support the president, who are the conditional supporters. And they're with him now. They like the travel ban. They don't like it as much as the base, as the believers. But they're focused on the economy. And what they say is, if he doesn't deliver on the economy, he could lose their support. They voted for him because they thought he could fix it, because they need to see him deliver jobs. What they like is that they think he's shaking up Washington, so he's got that going. And so they don't like the tweets as much and the communication style, but they're waiting to see the economy.
And these conditional voters are the ones we've run into for when President Trump was a candidate, and we hear from them ever more in my conversations with those I met out on the campaign trail who I still stay in touch with. They say, in Washington, you care about this and that and the other thing. I saw him talking at Carrier about jobs, and that's why I want him in Washington. And all of this chaos you're concerned about in Washington, that's what I wanted, is for him to go and break up Washington. So that is the conditional voters in the second group. Who's in the third group?
The third is really interesting because they could come over and support him, and they say so, which is when you see these support numbers and these approval numbers, remember, they could go lower, but they could also go a lot higher if he were to be able to bring these groups over. They are also looking for him to fix the economy. That's what they want him to do, first and foremost.
And these are Democrats who he could pick up. They're not with him yet, but they could.
Some Democrats and a lot of independents. There's also a lot of non-voters out there who stayed out of this election, but they're kind of rooting for him in a way. They want him to succeed. They want the nation to succeed, but they're not there yet. And the other key of it, John, is they feel like he hasn't reached out to them, and they feel like he doesn't respect people of different views. Right now, they are people of different views with him on policy, but if he were to make that reaching out, they say, they could come over.
So, and this is the tension between the people who really love President Trump and those he needs to get who are just outside of that group.
Right, because that these people, we call them curious, they say Democrats should work with Donald Trump to find solutions where they can, but the resistors, that part of the Democratic base, the fourth group...
The fourth group, the resistors. What are they? What's their profile?
Well, their profile is they want the Democrats, and most of them are Democrats, liberal Democrats, to stand up against Trump on almost everything. So that is the tension, because what do the Democrats do? They've probably got to satisfy both of these groups of current Trump opponents. But their profile is also, beyond being more liberal and opposed to the president on these policies, they're Democrats' base voters. They're more likely to be women and minority voters. They also feel that the president isn't reaching out, isn't trying to respect all of their views. And they're angrier than most of the other Trump opponents. They say they feel angry, but not yet motivated. And that's part. Not yet motivated. So the Democrats still have to sort of work on that part of the base.
And we talked a little bit about that with Chuck Schumer. It's the ones, the resistors and then the curious. That's where the Democrat fight is, between their base, which wants no dealing with Donald Trump at all, and the curious who want Democrats at least to try to work with the president. All right, Anthony Salvato, thank you so much. As always, we can't wait to...
All right, there you have it. Does that make sense to you as the spectrum goes, about 45% in the middle, about 30 to 35 on the Democratic side hardcore, and about 20 on Republican hardcore? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I wish they also would have said geographically where, if they could have drilled down where a lot of these people are, that would have been interesting as well to see, like, if in big cities where people feel versus rural, versus the coastals and stuff like that, because I think a lot of that's important as well. But I think that, I do think, especially on the left and right there, those numbers sound accurate to me, from the shows that I watch. I do think that, just like when President Obama came in office and Mitch McConnell, said very publicly that the goal of the Republican Party was to have, a one-term presidency, that plenty of Democrats feel the same way. And just as the Tea Party, made a lot of noise, so are a lot of the Democrats. But with the Tea Party difference, that was paid for in large part by the Koch brothers and others. And on what the Democrats are doing is not fueled by one major funding source. These are just a lot of people who feel strongly. But I would like to think that that conversation, that five-minute thing there, would resonate with President Trump and the administration, and that they hear from there that they could pick up significant support if they're willing to work with the Democrats and if they are able to really focus on the economy. Because it sounds, you know, that third group there, they're willing to support Trump if they see good results. So they're not hard and fast against him. And I think right there, that third and the group before them, the Trump supporters that aren't hardcore but want to see improvements in the economy, that makes up the majority of the country, I would imagine.
You know, I was surprised at that percentage. That I thought that the hardcore percentage would be greater. And I was a little bit surprised that when you do
out on both sides?
Well, not on the Republican side, but I thought, because what you're seeing from the Democrats is, and it was kind of interesting yesterday, and I'm curious your thoughts about this, that the Democratic Party, and this is, and I'll ask you about, this is what James Webb said. He said, you know, I think we're headed for a political meltdown, and we need it because we need to fix some stuff. And he said, let me just tell you the reaction of the Democratic Party to Donald Trump. It's going to be to move further to the left.
Yeah.
And he said, and that's not what it needs to do. It needs to move back to the center, because that big center part of the country, that used to be democratically, much of it was democratic in nature, you know, and the Democratic Party was a party of small business. It was a party of labor. And he said, you know, the Democratic Party has lost that. So, I'm curious your thoughts.
I saw him say that also, and it made me wonder. I was thinking about it because I thought, well, I wonder. I wish Chuck Todd had drilled down on that with him. That was on Meet the Press.
Right.
I wonder if he had said, "Okay, what do you mean by the Democratic Party is going further left?" Because I think at the base of this is the idea that what's keep coming up in the news that white folks in the flyover states are called the forgotten people, or the
right.
Democrats left them behind, or something along those lines. But I don't think it's really a race issue. I think it's a socioeconomic issue. And so when I thought, okay, Trump did get out there and say, I'm going to bring jobs back. I'm going to provide you jobs or manufacturing and all this stuff. And I thought, well, what did Hillary Clinton say something along those lines too? And she didn't address white America, but, you know, she and the Democrat leaders have typically fought for, marginalized populations and middle class America. And so I was left after listening to Senator Webb wanting more from him on what he means by that. Right. Because I think if you listen to Bernie Sanders or Senator Warren or the other folks, they're still talking about taking care of people, you know, who are earning $50,000 or less, or and then middle class as well. I think a lot of people in America think they're middle class, and maybe they're actually not. And so they're really suffering, and it's paycheck to paycheck. And that's why the economy is so critical to them. And I don't think that's a white flyover state issue. I think it's to anyone, whatever color or race you are, that falls in a certain socioeconomic category. So I'm not sure that the Democratic Party is going far on the left. I think we're just hearing a lot more loud voices from people who are labeled that way.
All right. Email says this. Hey, Mac, I'm hearing the term, and I'm not real familiar with it. Maybe you guys can help. What is this whole idea of identity politics? You know, I'm not exactly sure. Justin?
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I would guess that it's referring to when people are just, I think if you are come from a particular background or a race or socioeconomic, that therefore you will, you're automatically relegated to voting a certain way.
Well, I'm looking for Wikipedia defines identity politics as, quote, a tendency for people of a particular religion, race, social background, etc., to form exclusive political alliances, moving away from traditional broad-based party politics. In Boston in mid-November, Bernie Sanders said, one of the struggles that you're going to see in the Democratic Party is whether we go beyond identity politics. Doing so is not just a matter of party survival, but of survival as a Democratic-based country. Republicans successfully lured Democrats into making minority issues a focus. During his campaign, President-elect Donald Trump promoted divide and conquer as a solution to the American woes. Build a wall to keep out the Mexican, ban Muslims, set up a registry, insult women about their looks so men don't have to compete with them, mock the disabled, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so the bottom line is identity politics is to focus on religion, race, social background, etc., to form political alliances by speaking to those issues specifically and not, I guess, to moving away from traditional broad-based party politics.
So does that mean instead of, for instance, Republicans for Trump, it would be Latinos for Clinton or,
yes,
veterans for whoever, or
yes,
smaller groups?
Yes, it sounds like the smaller group relative to the larger group.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when we talk about that because, for instance, I'm sure there are veterans for Trump and veterans for Clinton groups, but no, when you get down to it, I don't necessarily subscribe to the voice of either one of those groups, as a veteran, and I believe in some from one and some from the other. So even when you have your own group, it's hard to do that. I think within the Democratic Party, typically there are, many, it's a much more heterogeneous group, many different kinds of people in the Democratic Party, and they don't always lock arms and walk step in step, and that's part of the reason they don't do as well sometimes as Republicans, who are more homogenous and are able to lock arms and all vote the same way, and they have great party loyalty. We've seen that in Congress, and so, after Obama's election, and the Republican Party said they were going to get big tents and have a much, much broader appeal. I don't think they followed that with this election, but I don't know if identity politics is something that Republicans are challenged with.
Right. No, I saw, and I wish Chuck Todd would have asked Senator Webb to expand on that, because I will tell you what, Senator Webb is one of the smartest guys I've ever heard in my life. I remember hearing him in the 80s. He came out when he was Secretary of the Navy. I was on an aircraft carrier. And he came on and he said, and he just talked issues. And I remember thinking,
yeah,
this guy's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. And whether it was whatever number of ships we're looking for in the Navy,
yeah,
to the Veterans Administration, to healthcare. He's a smart guy, and he's a self-proclaimed moderate or centrist, he says, look, you can call me a conservative Democrat, many would call me a liberal Republican. I've got to be in a party, so that's what I am. He's now doing journalism. I'm trying to get him to come on, but
well,
he's
back to journalism.
Yeah. So because that's where he started as a writer,
right,
and became very, very prominent.
One of the reasons I joined the Marine Corps was a friend of my dad's, who was a Vietnam vet, gave me Jim Webb's book, Fields of Fire, to read for the town's platoon commander over there. Yeah. That's in high school, and it really inspired me. And, I mean, he's a great writer. He has a long, long history in that. And so I'm sure he'll be successful in it again. If you could get him on your show, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, no, he said he'd come on. They wanted to wait till after the election and whatnot. So yeah. I'll reengage on that. I read that book, too. And when he was on our aircraft carrier, we were out on Gonzo Station, which is, we used to not go into the Persian Gulf because we didn't want to transit the Straits of Hormuz because of the surface to ship missiles that the Iranians had. But we're over that now. Anyway, but we were out there. There was a point in our history when we were escorting Kuwaiti oil tankers up and down the coast, up and down the Persian Gulf, because the Iranians had threatened them. Anyway, we were out there doing that. We were out there for about 105 straight days doing that stuff. Wow. And Webb came out to see us. The battleship, I want to say the New Jersey was in front of us. It might have been the Missouri, but it slewed all of its 16-inch guns to one side and fired that stuff. And, oh, my God. The whole sky on one side of the ship filled up with fire. And I remember thinking, if that's what it looks like coming out, what does it look like when it hits? Like, good God. And supposedly it displaces laterally 16 feet in the water when they do that.
Holy cow.
Exactly. So anyway, wow. Webb came out, and he came down to see the Marines in our Marine detachment area. And, he comes in, first Marine ever to be Secretary of the Navy. Marines, my CO introduces him. Marines of the Marine Detachment, USS Ranger. This is retired. I think he was retired as a captain. Marine Captain James Webb, our current Secretary of the Navy. With that, they go crazy. And then they finally, shut up. And he says, well, not only am I the first Secretary of the Navy who was a Marine, but I'm pretty sure I'm the first Secretary of the Navy that has this. And with that, he pulls up his sleeve, and he's got this big tattoo. Exactly. On his shoulder.
Wow.
It's a sunset, and this girl in the sunset, he said, I got this in Thailand on my R&R leave right before I got wounded in Vietnam. And the Marines were like,
They were, of course, I love that.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the coolest. But he's one of those guys like General Zinni is and General Kelly is.
Yeah.
They can play the range of characters they need to play because they are all those guys. They're different parts of them are prior enlisted Marine. They're very common guys, and so he's Webb, very 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 impressive. What else is on your mind? What's on your mind this week?
Well, the one last thing before we hang up is that it seemed like a lot of people, especially on the conservative side of the house, got really bothered when when Bill O'Reilly was talking to President Trump about Putin and said Putin's a killer, and Trump said, you think our country is so innocent, we have killers too. And that really bothered a lot of people. And it didn't bother me. I think.
Why not?
Trump said he ran on a platform of being against the Iraq war, up for debate, but he now says he's against it. He says that, we interfere. You're seeing this play out in the foreign policy he's laying out, that we interfere all over the world. We stick our nose in where it doesn't belong. But for some reason in this country, it seems like we really don't want to address any of our faults. and we have meddled in other, I think you and I talked about this before, we have meddled in other countries. We supported dictators. We support countries in the Middle East that do terrible things. We in 1959 in Iran, was overthrow the Shah with our CIA. And, we've done lots of things, even inside our own country with civil rights and all sorts of important issues. So I don't think it's saying something bad when he said, you think our country's so innocent? I mean, we're not, and no country is. And I think if we turn a blind eye to actions we've taken in the past or maybe the not so distant past, the rest of the country or the rest of the world is aware that we do these things, And so when we don't talk about it in school, we don't learn about it, then we're wondering why other countries don't like us or why people get upset at things. Here are some of those reasons. So it doesn't bother me that he made a comment like that.
You know, I did too. You're a little bit shocked when he does it. But you're sitting there and you're going, it's the truth. I mean, look, if we can't come to grips with what we've done in the Middle East,
right?
That and how that's bled into Europe, then we're kidding ourselves.
Right. But,
you know, we could say the Russians are evil and all that. And let me tell you, I think the Russians, they're pretty. We do it and we say it was a mistake. The Russians, I don't think, care about collateral damage. And I think that's the difference. I think we are well-intentioned. We make mistakes. We kill innocent people. I think the Russians are more in line with the Middle East in terms of their view of if people get hurt. Hey, you know, sorry, but it happened, you know?
Yeah, that could be, but you're saying that as an American, the rest of the world doesn't necessarily think that.
No, you're right. You're right. And so Trump's line is very much in, I don't know, but you know, I know you got to go. So we like to act like, as Americans, it's almost like a Pollyanna.
Yeah.
Right? We're very Pollyann-esque because we, like us, we did something wrong? Really? Is that true? Might that not be? Like, how could that happen?
Right.
And so,
I mean, for a country that constantly says over and over again, we're the best country in the world, whatever that means, you know, we should, you know, and we're making big decisions that affect people far outside our borders and hundreds of millions of people on our own borders, we should really, really swing our decisions. And if something goes wrong, okay. I mean, obviously it was classified, no one needs to know that, but we feel justified why we did things. And if it offends some people, okay, but that's grown-up world, you know, stuff. So
right.
You just put our head in the sand and act like, oh, everything we do is great, we're liberators, and you know, we're just taking care of people. That's not really accurate, because a lot of what we do is fueled by our, frankly, our capitalist system and our business needs and our national security. And different people come to different decisions when based on their interests.
Okay, final word, final question. Does Flynn make it or not?
I don't think he's going to make it through the year, but I don't think he's going to get balanced just because of this.
Right.
I think it's kind of like Kellyanne Conway with the Bowling Green massacre, which he said three times the massacre never happened, and then went on and did a free plug for Trump's daughter's clothing line, and then they said she was counseled. Okay, that's it's a big violation of ethics in this country, but she was counseled for that, and so I think Trump will get counseled.
All right, the just quick email in the 60 seconds we have left.
All right.
Republicans are arm in arm? ? Times about 7. He must have missed House Majority Leader Eric Cantor losing his primary in 14 and Speaker Boehner being deposed. And then there's Trump, who was resisted by many Republicans. Justin reads too much New York Times and HuffPo. P.S. I did a month on the New Jersey as an ROTC summer cruise.
Cool.
And tasted the fire from those 16-inch guns. Anyway, so
that's cool. No, I'm not basing my decisions on the Huffington Post and New York Times. Although I do read the New York Times, I think that when you see the votes come in, look on, like for instance, supporting the cabinet members when Trump said he's going to drain the swamp, a lot of Republicans vote for him because of that. But then you have Betsy DeVos as a joke. Where you have billionaires up there, people coming from Goldman Sachs and other industries which he lambasted, yet they all voted for him. There was a lot of solidarity there. And that's why I think they may express opinions on the sidelines, but when it comes time to vote, I think the Republicans do well on that. Yes, Boehner suffered because he was dealing with a Tea Party that was tough to handle. And Chantra, that's a good point. But they it's not like they voted for a Democrat. They just voted for a different Republican.
All right. Hey, back away from the Huffington Post, all right? Right. We're on to you now. We're on to you.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. We'll keep our eye on Mike Flynn.
I got to go.
Right. All right, man. Have a good week.
Okay. Thanks, Mac. Talk to you later.
There you have it.
Bye.
That is Justin Constantine. If you're looking for a guest speaker, I can tell you he's a good guy. He's been through an incredible amount and an interesting story of one that he says made him a better person, if you can imagine that. So just an interesting guy to talk to, and I would if you are looking for a guest speaker, he's a good one, and because he can talk from a number of different perspectives. One of them is change, how that is. The other one is qualities that Marines have that you can use in business. So interesting stuff. Anyway, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, Jerry Durant's gonna join us. He just back from Iraq. And we will talk to him. Jerry started his Marine Corps career as a radio operator in Vietnam. Yeah, boom, exactly, a radio operator in Vietnam. So we will talk to him next on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.